Hello and welcome to Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. This is volume 44, number 34, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth District Talking Newspaper Association and published on Friday the 23rd of August 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Alison and Andrew. And in the news this week, three people have drowned on the area's waterways, apprentices have problems with the firm's bankruptcy, and stand back on Sunday for the truckers. In addition, Alison looks at Yarmouth's holiday history, and Andrew looks at a couple of potentially world-changing events on this day in the past. All this coming your way during the next hour-ish. No birthdays, but loads of news, so over to Andrew and Alison.
Hello and welcome to Grapevine. Well, it's a sunny and somewhat breezy day as we bring you this week's show, and I'm pleased to say I'm joined once again by Alison. Welcome again, Alison.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
And we'll be bringing you our usual mix of news and stories from around the area. Plus, Alison has a feature on holidays in Great Yarmouth, and I'll be telling you what happened on this day in history. Let's get underway with our first section of the news with Alison.
Good morning. Major work to dual two sections of the A47 in Norfolk is about to get underway in earnest and will last for 3 years. A sign has appeared on the A47 between Easton and North Tuddenham saying roadworks will begin on Monday, August 19th. The work will see two new lanes created on the 5.5 mile stretch, while a separate project will involve the dualling of just over 1.6 miles of the route further east between Blowfield and North Burlingham. The two schemes, along with a revamp of Thickthorn Roundabout on the edge of Norwich, had been largely put on ice due to a long-running legal challenge by environmentalists trying to block the work. While that challenge by eco-campaigner Dr. Andrew Boswell went on, National Highways, the government company behind the projects, was limited on what work it could do. Dr. Boswell had argued the government had acted unlawfully in allowing the road schemes because their cumulative impact on the environment had not been properly considered. But the High Court and the Court of Appeal rejected his claim, and his legal avenues were exhausted when the UK Supreme Court turned down his application in May. While the case rumbled on, National Highways was restricted to work such as archaeological studies and rerouting utilities rather than the actual dualling effort. National Highways said the legal case had delayed the projects by months, adding millions to the cost. There has been work done recently to move a gas line near North Burlingham and to install water tanks near Hollingham, at a section of the road which has been repeatedly flooded in recent months. But the main work will now begin on the two dualling schemes, with construction due to go on until 2027. On the stretch of road between North Burlingham and Blowfield, work has recently been done to build a site office to manage the dualling scheme there.
Apprentices have been given just weeks to find new jobs after a Norfolk engineering firm went into administration. Specialised Management Services, SMS, Alderley in Galston went under last month, leading to hundreds of job losses. And apprentices, some more than 3 years through their four-year courses, have been told by the college coordinating their training that they have just 12 weeks to find a new employer or they will lose their apprenticeships. East Coast College, which has campuses in Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft, said the 12-week deadline to find employment is set by the government, which provides funding for apprentices made redundant over that period to allow them to continue their off-the-job training. Rachel Bunn, a director at East Coast College, said, "We are committed to supporting our apprentices to find new employment in the region to allow them to continue their apprenticeship journey and secure their chosen careers. Our team are making contact with local employers to secure new opportunities and work with each learner on their next steps." Noah Harrison, aged 20, from Lowestoft, was a year through his four-year mechanical engineering apprenticeship at SMS Alderley when the firm went into administration on July the 24th. "I spoke to the college and I was told I have 12 weeks to find a job or my college course will be down the drain. But if I find a job, I'll be able to pick the course up again," he said. There's a lot of pressure on us to find new jobs. I was really getting into it and getting used to the work and the working environment. But then out of nowhere, I didn't have a job. Alfie King, also 20, from Lowestoft, was halfway through his multi-skilled electrical apprenticeship. He said, if you're fully qualified, there's loads of jobs out there. But if you're halfway through an apprenticeship, no one wants to know you because you haven't been trained by them. Another 20-year-old, Rocco Hall, also from Lowestoft, was halfway through his four-year apprenticeship. He said, 12 weeks is not a lot of time at all to find a new job. It adds a lot of pressure. I've applied to quite a few places and had a couple of replies, but it's a waiting game. Harley Grimble, aged 19, from Galston, was in his first year. He said, we were all shocked and didn't see it coming. Finding another company to take me on the same course, is going to be difficult. Hopefully I'll find another company who will carry that on, but who knows if they will. 19-year-old Harrison Fraser from Galston had just finished the second year of his apprenticeship. I've found something, but I'm waiting for the college to confirm if they can facilitate the training, he said. But they can't give me an answer until the tutors are back from summer break. The government's 2023-24 apprenticeship funding rules state that it will fund to completion any apprentice who has either completed at least 75% of their practical period or who is within 6 months of their final day of training. Apprentices who are made redundant will be provided funding support from the government for a minimum of 12 weeks to allow off-the-job training to continue as planned while they look for another job. While unemployed, the apprentices will not receive a wage.
Thousands of people in Norfolk face losing a lifeline, which has helped them through the cost of living crisis, charity bosses and council chiefs warn. The Household Support Fund, currently available to those struggling with basic costs for food, bills and other essentials, is due to end next month. This comes ahead of an expected spike in demand over the winter. More than 90,000 households in Norfolk have been helped through the grant, administered by the County Council, over the past year. Ben Scarlett, Director of Community Action Norfolk, said the fund had been a lifeline and said no one in Norfolk should be choosing between heating and eating. With changes to the winter fuel allowance, we're very worried people will really struggle this winter. David Powells, Chief Executive of Norfolk Community Law Services, said the loss of the scheme was a huge worry. He said, we have used these grants to provide debt advice to people in crisis and offer supermarket vouchers to clients who have no food in the house. Since 2021, £43.5 million has been spent on the Household Support Fund, £40.2 million from the government and £3.3 million from Conservative-controlled County Hall. Andrew Jamieson, Norfolk County Council's Cabinet Member for Finance, has written to ministers urging them to retain the vital scheme. He said, we've just seen how critical this extra support has been to many households in Norfolk through the cost of living crisis, and we know many people who rely on this support will be concerned to see it end. We will continue to help those in need via our client hardship service, with funding in place for the rest of this financial year. But until the government lays out a clear plan for getting central funding to people in need, both we and many Norfolk residents are going to be living with real uncertainty. A government spokesperson said this government will tackle the scar of poverty by making sure work pays and improving support to help people into good work. More details on the Household Support Fund will be set out in due course.
A film studies student accused of sexually assaulting three women as they slept told police he was dreaming at the time, the court has heard. Connie Axley, aged 30, had been studying film studies at the University of Suffolk, based at East Coast College in Galston, when he was accused of attacks on three women. Norwich Crown Court heard all three women, who cannot be named for legal reasons, were asleep at the time of the alleged offences. Opening the prosecution case on Monday, Andrew Thompson said Yaxley told police he had sex with one of the alleged victims, quote, without knowing because he was dreaming at the time. Mr. Thompson said a person consents by choice, and if they have the freedom and capacity to make that choice. But he said a sleeping woman, the same as if it were an unconscious woman, cannot consent to sexual conduct that takes place while she is asleep. He said the first alleged victim had been asleep and, quote, unable to consent on the occasion Jaxley is accused of raping her, between December 2017 and December 2019. The jury of 7 men and 5 women were told the second alleged victim will recount 2 occasions when she awoke from a deep sleep to find Jaxley having sex with her. Mr. Thompson said the third alleged victim had been sleeping downstairs at his Yarmouth home and woke to find him engaged in unwanted touching that was clearly sexual. Jaxley of Sandown Road, Yarmouth, denies 3 counts of rape against 1 woman and 2 counts of rape against the second woman between April 2018 and August 2020. He has also denied 1 offence of sexual assault against a third woman in August 2020. The trial continues.
A life-saving machine which detects skin cancer has been sitting idle for 15 months at Norfolk's largest hospital. The £50,000 Horus mole mapping machine was donated to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, the NNUH, in June 2023. The delay in the device being put to use comes as it was revealed a patient at the hospital waited 345 days for skin cancer treatment. Wendy Evans, aged 80, donated the machine following the death of her son Neil, aged 48, in June 2021, after he had been diagnosed with melanoma, a type of skin cancer. He died in Sydney, Australia, where he had lived since 2004. Mrs. Evans, who spearheaded the fundraising mission as a tribute to her son, is demanding answers as to why the device is not being put to use by health bosses. She said, "It is absolutely crazy that after our huge fundraising efforts, which saw many, many people come together to donate or partake in our endeavours, the machine we bought after raising £50,000 is still sitting in its box. As a family, we simply want answers. Do the NNUH still want the machine? When do they plan to use it? And why has it taken so long? If there isn't any clarity soon, we will offer it to another hospital. My son was from Galston, so it would be fitting if James Paget would accept the machine." Mrs. Evans, from Galston, did thank some consultants at the hospital who have been pushing for the machine to be put into use. Neil Evans was a sports enthusiast in his youth, playing football, tennis, cricket and golf. When he was 15, he was the first person from Norfolk selected to play badminton for the England junior team. He competed at under 15 and under 16 levels, travelling all over the country and to Ireland and the Netherlands, winning the under 16 All-England boys doubles title. Unfortunately, a serious ankle injury when he was 17 cut short his badminton career. Neil had attended Cliff Park Junior and High Schools, and before going to university at Loughborough, where he would study banking and finance, he took a year off and travelled to Australia. He never forgot the place, and in 2004 emigrated there, where he worked in banks before becoming Division Director of Macquarie. In 2017, he was diagnosed with melanoma.
A parish council is at loggerheads with Broads officials over plans to protect a collection of willow trees along a riverbank close to one of the best-known landmarks on the waterways. The Broads Authority has issued a provisional protection order for the trees growing next to Potterheim Bridge, a 600-year-old river crossing known to be notoriously difficult to pass under. The willows grow on land that was once the location of the Old Bridge Hotel, a 19th century pub that burned down in 1991. This land has become hotly contested in recent years and has been the focus of a lengthy planning dispute between the landowner who wants to rebuild the hotel and the Broads Authority. Nick McMinn failed in his attempts to gain permission to build holiday lets and a restaurant on the site after it went to the Planning Inspectorate, which is the government body which presides over planning disputes. The need to remove the trees was a key factor in the government officials refusing the plans, believing they, quote, play an important role in the landscape. Subsequently, the Broads Authority is seeking to protect the trees from future development and has placed them under protection, which means permission must be sought for any work. However, reps with Bastwick Parish Council is seeking to block these new rules and has objected to the tree protection order. Parish councillors have claimed the trees do not contribute to the wider amenity of the site, and they worry the roots are damaging the riverbank. But Broads Authority officials dispute this and say the trees can be managed to avoid the banks being harmed, and they believe they help enhance the landscape. The move comes as a fresh application has been lodged to gain a lawful development certificate to rebuild the Old Bridge Hotel. And it appears Mr. McMinn is trying to attempt a different tactic by attempting to get different planning permission after his previous attempts failed. But if the tree preservation order is confirmed, it could scupper these plans. Broads Authority members will make a decision after inspecting the site.
A new housing development will be built in a market town in the Broads. RP Sherwood Builders Limited has been given permission to build 8 houses on a parcel of land to the north of Old Baker's Yard off High Street in Stalham. The scheme will be a mix of 2-storey semi-detached houses and detached houses. A document supporting the application stated the developer intends to retain the houses for rental purposes, but that this could change. The application was supported by Stalham Town Council and had faced 2 objections from residents.
Staying in Broadland, experts have claimed a key section of river in the Norfolk Broads has silted up and contributed to the widespread winter flooding, and they're due to release their findings. The Bure Hump, a little known and otherwise nondescript stretch of the River Bure, has become the focal point of concern due to fears a lack of dredging of the waterway has meant rainwater is not flowing out into the sea. It follows speculation that this pinch point caused problems further upstream in the Thurne Basin, where high water levels last winter left farmers swamped, homes backed up with sewage, and boat firms struggling. Following members of the public raising concerns at a public meeting in Hickling, the Environment Agency agreed to undertake a study of the crucial section of the river near Great Yarmouth. Experts have been using modelling data to probe whether more dredging is needed of the lower Bure. The work is now in the final stages and the results are expected in the coming weeks. A spokeswoman for the Environment Agency said, "We are conducting modelling regarding dredging on the River Bure and its effects on the tidal reaches of the rivers Bure, Ant and Thurne. This work is in the final stages of preparation and the final report is expected to be published by the end of August." Members of the boating community affected by the floods have speculated that a lack of dredging of the Bure Hump could be causing problems upstream. Henry Cater, chairman of the Norfolk Strategic Flood Alliance, has also raised concerns about northern rivers becoming shallower. The Broads Authority says it has carried out its duties to dredge the river to a depth that meets its navigational requirements, but is keen to find out if deeper dredging is needed. John Packman, Chief Executive, said, "We are working with the Environment Agency to see whether removal of mud from the lower Bure will have a positive effect on flooding, and this is a top priority for us."
A former museum and art gallery could be set for a new lease of life. The 17th century building at 26 to 27 South Quay in Great Yarmouth has been home to the Norfolk Nelson Museum, the local police force and a draper, among other occupants, and now under new plans it could be turned into a coffee shop. The proposal, in the hands of planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, would see a gallery, cafe and shop open on the ground floor. The plan also includes 2 artist studios in the courtyard, and the first and second floors being converted into a 4-bedroom apartment. The Grade 2 listed building is currently empty, and most recently operated as the Yare Gallery, which closed in 2023 before the property was put up for sale this year by the Great Yarmouth Preservation Trust. A document submitted with the application states that internal alterations would, quote, fully regard the nature of the building, while the elements introduced and retained would enhance its architectural value. A decision on the bid is expected by September the 11th. The 3-floor building with a walled garden was once the home of parliamentarian Sir George England in the 17th century. When it was the Nelson Museum, the building displayed thousands of exhibits dedicated to Admiral Lord Nelson, including a lock of his hair and his boyhood penknife. The memorabilia had been on display since 2002, until the museum closed in 2019 due to declining visitor numbers and the removal of council funding. During the 1930s, the building was home to the Archer family, and a draper called Edward Crowe traded from the building between 1934 and 1938. The building was significantly damaged during the bombing raids of the Second World War. From the late 1940s until 1962, it was a police headquarters, and during the 1970s and 1980s, it was used as offices for Norwell, an oil-related company.
And on the other side of Great Yarmouth, an amusement arcade could double in size as Family Amusements Limited are seeking permission to develop land on the site of Wellington Pier on Marine Parade. The proposal is for the extension of the existing amusement arcade to form a new family entertainment centre. The site is currently unused and was once an outdoor roller skating rink. I'm sure many people will remember that as well. The purpose of the extension is to increase the family arcade covered area with a secondary street entrance and staff parking accommodated in a semi-basement below. The application says the extension would create 20 full-time and 10 part-time jobs. A statement submitted with the application states, "It could be said the existing modern amusement building has a major impact on the conservation area setting and the adjacent winter gardens. However, the proposed extension, now located on the southern side, is completely hidden from view from the winter gardens," it adds. The applicant says the form of the extension will, quote, "blend into the environment and will also be screened from South Beach Parade, hidden behind the cafe buildings along the street." Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council are currently looking at the plans, with a decision expected by October the 3rd. In May, the council approved a bid to redevelop nearby Britannia Pier, which will see a facelift including a new Art Deco style facade and an enlarged curved roof. The Wellington Pier, a 700 foot wooden structure, was opened on Halloween 1853, having cost £6,776 to build. But 5 years later, a second pier was built close to the Wellington, and this had a severe financial effect on the profitability of the pier. In 1899, Great Yarmouth Corporation bailed out the failing business for the sum of £1,250. And then in 1996, as we all know, comedian Jim Davidson took on the lease and invested around £750,000 into the pier's interior. 6 years later, it was taken over by Family Amusements.
Continuing along the seafront, work has finally begun on building 43 new seafront beach huts, 2 years after being approved by councillors. The huts will line a stretch of the popular promenade close to the Venetian waterways, as dozens of the new buildings will be added to the seafront. The plans for the huts were approved in September 2022, with the original hopes for a quick turnaround and opening the following summer. After a series of delays, the Borough Council has now announced the first huts are being put up this week, with five ready before the end of the month. In September, 33 huts are set to be completed, with the final four being finished in October. They will initially be offered on an annual hire basis from April to March each year, costing £2,260 per annum. Councillor Graham Plant, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for operational property and asset management, said, "We are delighted the beach huts are due for completion. They will be a real asset on our seafront and will be a valuable addition for those who want to make the most of all the beach has to offer in Great Yarmouth. A purpose-built base for the huts has already been constructed, with a dedicated amenity block on the way. The council is now looking for people to hire the huts, with the buildings available until March the 31st on a pro rata basis. Once finished, the project is expected to have cost £683,000, although delays plagued the project, with more coming from a change in contractor after issues earlier this summer. Councillor Plant added, "We're really pleased with the outcome and how good they look. Constantly enhancing the offer for residents and visitors to the borough is hugely important to us, and these new beach huts demonstrate our commitment to improving facilities."
I'm sure we'll be hearing much more about that in the coming weeks. Now, the village pub is set to reopen with a new landlord after suddenly closing last month. The former publicans of the King's Head in Belton shut its doors in July after realising the business was, quote, not financially viable. But another local landlord, Lee Johnson, has since stepped up and hopes to reopen the venue on Friday, August the 23rd. Mr. Johnson, who's 58, has run pubs in the area for years, and patrons might recognise him from the Plough and Sail in Lowestoft, the Old Frank in Alton Broad, the Turnstone in Hopton, the Wrestlers and the Mitre in Great Yarmouth, and the Fox and Hounds in Filby. He set his sight on the King's Head because he has family in and around Belton and shares a special connection to the pub. The last time I visited the King's Head was a family day for my son's birthday, he recalled. Sadly, my dad passed away the same day on Easter Sunday. It was somewhat of a shock, so I've never forgotten the King's Head. He explained that although the pub trade is not for everyone, he enjoys the work and the relationships landlords can build with their patrons. Pub life is either in your blood or not, he said. The long hours spent trying to please locals and strangers seem thankless at times, but it is rewarding more often than not. And with this in mind, Mr. Johnson has kept the locals' happiness front and centre of his plans for the King's Head. He said he would recruit pool and darts teams, play music and serve good beer and food. But running a pub is also a case of being hands-on. Right from when people walk through the door, the landlord will be around and available to talk to, he added. The venue has a function room which will be free for regulars to hire, and Mr. Johnson will be looking into entering the bed and breakfast market. Well, good luck to him. Now, Alison's got a special feature for us this week. We always like to bring you something a bit topical or a bit historical. And I think this week, Alison, you're going to talk to us about holidays in Great Yarmouth?
That's right, yes. With a sunny August, as we've been lucky to have, I thought it might be interesting to find out about how holidays in Great Yarmouth had developed. Great Yarmouth, along with many other seaside resorts, such as Brighton, Margate and Bournemouth, began to become popular at the end of the 18th century, when wealthy people became aware of the benefits of sea air, as opposed to the smoke-filled air of industrialising cities. When the railway opened in Great Yarmouth in 1844, it allowed not just the elite, but people from all walks of life to have a holiday. The town flourished, with the Wellington Pier, as we've heard already today, being built in 1854, the Britannia Pier in 1858, and the town's first cinema was opened in 1908. Even in the 21st century, Great Yarmouth still attracts over 5 million day trippers each year. In 1955, Great Yarmouth and Gorleston were billed as the resorts that have everything. They were so popular that the director of the town's entertainment and publicity department included the following message in a brochure. He said, "May I ask you seriously to consider taking your holiday in either June or September? They are really glorious months. But if you must come in July or August, please book your accommodation as early as possible." Let's take a look at the history of a few of Great Yarmouth's better known hotels. The Star was described as a first class hotel, for centuries the best known licensed house in Great Yarmouth. The Star Hotel dates from the 17th century and was originally built by wealthy merchants dealing in fish, grain and wool. Its location was chosen to be as close as possible to the bridge across the River Yare, which is the main road into town. At the end of the 18th century, it was converted into the Star Tavern. Dickens visited Great Yarmouth in 1848 and modelled an inn in his book David Copperfield on the Star. Nelson also stayed in the hotel, and the fittings of the room that he used can now be seen in the Metropolitan Museum in New York. During the 20th century, parts of the hotel were demolished to allow for expansion to the building next door. Sadly, the hotel went into administration in 2009, and its fortunes have not been good since then. The Royal Hotel was built in 1840. It was originally called the Victoria. Dickens stayed there in 1847, during which time he was writing David Copperfield. In this book, the character Peggotty says that Great Yarmouth was, upon the whole, the finest place in the universe. King Edward VII was also a guest at the end of the 19th century, and it is said that he entertained his mistress, Lily Langtry, at the hotel. The Flamingo Amusement Arcade was formerly the Bath Hotel, built in 1835. It's the oldest building on Great Yarmouth seafront, and it was the site of the first sea bathing house, built in 1759. If you look above the arcade on the ground floor, you can still get an idea of how grand the original building must have been. The original Cliff Hotel in Galston was opened in July 1898, and it was one of the grandest hotels in Norfolk, with 139 bedrooms and its own stable block. There were four postal deliveries for guests each day. The then Prince of Wales visited it shortly after its opening. The building of the hotel cost £25,000, which now would be about £2.6 million. Sadly, after just 17 years, the hotel was completely destroyed in a fire that started in one of the bedrooms on Boxing Day 1915. The only part that survived was its annex, the older buildings of which form the hotel today. Holidays in luxury hotels weren't for everyone, though, and Great Yarmouth offered numerous guest houses and bed and breakfast accommodation. In 1955, self-catering accommodation was advertised in glowing terms. You will find everything newly furnished and in perfect condition, wonderful beds, electric kitchens to delight your wife, and bathrooms where the hot water never fails. Meanwhile, so-called old people's holidays were available in May and September 1955, priced between 3 and 4 guineas. Albemarle Court, opposite the Venetian Waterways on North Drive, offered three-bedroom flats sleeping 8 to 9 people for between 15 and 17 guineas a week. For people who wanted a break from cooking, there were numerous guest houses and bed and breakfast establishments. The idea of the B&B became popular after the Second World War, when holidays started to be possible again. Local families would offer a room or rooms in their home, along with breakfast to paying guests. Often, the motto was, "Arrive as a guest and leave as a friend," and many lasting friendships were forged in this way. A less expensive type of accommodation was to be found in caravan parks. Caister Holiday Park, now Haven, was opened in 1906 by a Mr. Dodd, a founder member of the Independent Labour Party, as a socialist holiday camp, offering cheap holidays for people from East London. There were strict rules, such as no alcohol on site. Initially, accommodation was in tents, but after the First World War, these were replaced with chalets. By the 1930s, it had expanded and had a dance floor big enough for 600 couples. Further upgrades were introduced during the 1950s, and there was even a summer special Saturday Express train, which brought holidaymakers from London Liverpool Street to the station at Caister. The camp continued to grow and change with the times, and as we know, it still flourishes today. Let's hope that Great Yarmouth and Galston will continue as popular holiday destinations.
Oh, thanks, Alison. There's a few names there I'm sure many people remember.
I think they will.
I didn't know the Albemarle Court was ever a holiday let. I always thought they were always residentials.
I was quite surprised to find that out. And I was quite surprised to find the reference to wives liking the kitchens.
Oh, yeah, on holiday. Happy days. Thank you.
1, 2, 3! Jolly good company!
In wonderful Yarmouth by the sea. Wonderful Yarmouth, the place that has everything. Yarmouth, wonderful Yarmouth, you'll be as happy as a king. Strolling down the lovely promenade, your worries disappear and life is not so hard. Pretty girls all out upon the spree, give them a hug, give them a squeeze, take them on your knee. In Yarmouth, wonderful Yarmouth, lift your voices merrily. 1, 2, 3, jolly good company in wonderful Yarmouth by the sea.
Yarmouth, wonderful Yarmouth,
disappear so hard. Pretty girls all out upon the spree.
Just had to be that one. Ronnie Ranald and the band from the Old Marina, led by Neville Bishop. OK, back to the 2A's for more news, followed very closely by Andrew looking at this week in Days Gone By.
A woman has denied causing unnecessary suffering to animals at her farm in Rollesby. One of the animal welfare charges Anthea Hewitt is facing relates to 18 peacocks that were said not to be protected against pain, disease and injury. At least 10 Siberian Huskies and 4 Springer Spaniels, a goat and a rabbit, were also among the animals that Hewitt, aged 48, is said not to have ensured care for. Hewitt of Orchard Farm in Rollesby, near Great Yarmouth, entered a plea of not guilty to all charges when she appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court. The RSPCA prosecution includes 5 allegations that Hewitt caused unnecessary suffering to a protected animal. The other 15 charges under the Animal Welfare Act 2006 relate to Hewitt's alleged failure to be responsible for an animal and ensure their welfare. Many of the charges relate to dogs that were kept in kennels at the farm. It is said that the dogs' behavioural and social needs were not met, and that their environment, quote, did not protect them from pain, suffering, injury or disease. All the alleged offences are said to have happened on or before March the 5th, 2024. Prosecutors said the severity of the charges meant the trial should be heard at Crown Court, but magistrates ruled that their powers were sufficient. They warned Hewitt that she could still be sentenced at Crown Court if found guilty of the allegations. Rob Barley, mitigating, argued that no bail was necessary for his client. Magistrates accepted this and adjourned the hearing until June 23, 2025, when Hewitt will face trial at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court. Speaking outside of court after the hearing, Hewitt said the allegations were ridiculous. Last month, the RSPCA appealed to rehome 7 huskies, which used to be present at Orchard Farm. The dogs had been cared for at kennels near Newmarket.
A teenage sailor was aided by a Great Yarmouth-based energy company during his record-breaking and eco-friendly voyage. Equinor provided 18-year-old Harry Besley with essential overnight battery charging for his electric boat during his epic UK coastal circumnavigation. Harry embarked on the trip, the first of its kind for an electric boat, to raise awareness of the potential of electric boats to reduce coastal pollution and emissions. Richard Gurley, the leader of marine planning and logistics at Equinor, said, "We saw this as an opportunity to raise awareness about the need for ports to start looking into charging facilities for vessels, especially as electrification in the industry is becoming more commonplace. We wanted to showcase that even a small adjustment to our facilities could help in this regard, and highlight the possibility of greener vessels." The diligent planning and drive displayed by Harry was acknowledged by Equinor, with Mr. Gurley praising the young sailor, saying, "His commitment to the challenge and the potential impact of its work was truly inspiring, not just for our team, but for everyone who had the privilege of meeting him."
A Grade 2 listed former hotel with 14 bedrooms is set to go under the hammer at an auction next month. The Seahorse Guest House, just 200 metres from Great Yarmouth's Golden Mile, is on the market with a guide price of £275,000. It's an end of terraced property on a tree-lined street that was built around 1860 as two separate houses. It remained in residential use for nearly 100 years before being converted into a hotel. Previously, the hotel was called the Siena Lodge Hotel, before former owners Sandra and Philip Gray renamed it Seahorse Guest House, a reference to a ship once sailed by Lord Nelson. It was Mr. and Mrs. Gray who in 2014 invested more than £25,000 into restoring the property. Much money was saved during the revamp of the building, as Mr. Gray did most of the work himself. There is the possibility of converting the Victorian building back to residential use, though this is subject to a successful change of use application to the Great Yarmouth Borough Council. The auction is scheduled for Wednesday, September the 11th.
Fire crews have tackled a house blaze in a seaside village. Appliances from Great Yarmouth and Acle were called to Waters Lane in Hemsby at 5:20 p.m. on Wednesday, and the firefighters wore breathing apparatus and used main jets and hose reels to put out the flames. A thermal imaging camera was used to check for hotspots, and crews received their stop message at 6:20 p.m. The current extent of the damage and any injuries remain unknown, but Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service has been contacted by the Mercury for comment.
Concerns for the welfare of a missing 62-year-old man grew more than 24 hours after he was last seen. Manuel Pereira was last sighted at his home address in Nelson Road Central in Great Yarmouth at 3:50 a.m. on Monday, August the 19th. He is described as black, bald, of slim build and around 5'11" tall. It is believed Mr. Pereira was wearing a knee-length black padded coat over the top of a blue Tommy Hilfiger coat, a red and white t-shirt and blue jeans, Adidas grey trainers and possibly a black hat. A spokesman for Norfolk Police said there was growing concern for his welfare. Anyone who has seen him or has any information about where he may be should contact Norfolk Police.
And two men have died after a crash which shut the A47 Acle Strait for more than 12 hours. Emergency services were called to reports of a collision between the A1064 near Acle and the A149 to Great Yarmouth at about 11:40 p.m. on Friday the 17th of August. The crash involved an orange Sinus motorcycle and an Audi TT car. Both rider and the passenger of the motorcycle died at the scene. A spokesman for Norfolk Police said the driver of the Audi was taken to hospital with minor injuries and was soon discharged. The road was closed for more than 12 hours while investigations were carried out before eventually reopening just after 1 p.m. on Saturday. Anyone who may have witnessed the crash is asked to contact Norfolk Police.
A convicted domestic abuser attacked a woman and threatened to set fire to her home just months after being released from prison. David Rainey, aged 35, was sentenced to 15 months in April 2023 for a brutal attack that saw him punch a woman's teeth out. Following his release, he has now admitted attacking and threatening another woman. Norwich Magistrates Court heard he repeatedly abused and spat at the woman during a furious row on August the 16th, that also saw him threaten to burn down her house. Josephine Jones, prosecuting, said he had followed the woman after she left to go home after a pub crawl in Great Yarmouth. During the event, he had taken issue with her offering to buy drinks for other people. His attack and threats were captured on video footage from a Ring doorbell. Rainey of Anson Road in Great Yarmouth pleaded guilty to assault and asked for an offence of threatening to destroy property to be taken into consideration. Magistrates warned him that all options, including a return to prison, were open after ordering a pre-sentence report. He was granted bail until he is sentenced on November the 1st, with conditions not to contact his victim and not to attend a specified property in Great Yarmouth. Rainey was found guilty of his previous attack, having denied causing grievous bodily harm without intent, causing actual bodily harm and common assault. It came after police were called to an address in Galston-on-Sea in October 2022, following a report of a domestic incident. When officers arrived, Rainey had fled the scene. One woman at the address had been assaulted, and Rainey had punched a neighbour in the face, resulting in her losing three front teeth. Sergeant Stephen Lee of Norfolk Police said, "This was a particularly brutal attack on both women, and these kinds of incidents can have profound and long-lasting impact, as well as the physical damage caused."
A pub in Great Yarmouth has been named the best watering hole in East Anglia, following last month being declared both Pub of the Year and Cider Pub of the Year by Norfolk Camera, that's the Campaign for Real Ale. The winners from each county in the region were pitted against one another, with the Brackfriars Road Public House winning once again. The judges were impressed by the pub's inviting atmosphere, on-site microbrewery, an extensive selection of more than 100 Belgian bottled beers, as well as many other specialist drinks. Andrea Bryars, National Coordinator for the Pub of the Year competition, said, "These amazing pubs really are the creme de la creme, and I would encourage the public to seek out the 17 winners from across the nations and the regions of the UK. They are top-tier pubs, serving excellent beer, cider and perry, and run by welcoming, hard-working staff. The regional and national finalists will now compete for the UK National Pub of the Year Award, with judges whittling the 17 pubs down to just 4 in late September. Well, good luck to the Blackfriars with that.
Indeed. And continuing on the theme of awards, restaurants across Norfolk and Waveney have been shortlisted for prestigious awards. Lectai in Great Yarmouth, Easy Tiger in Beccles and Ahmed's Spice in Wyndham have been recognised in the Asian Restaurants and Takeaway Awards, known as ARTA, which had previously been dubbed the Oscars of the curry industries. The Thai Spot Lectai and the Asian fusion diner Easy Tiger were among the 10 restaurants shortlisted in the East Anglian Restaurant of the Year category. The Ahmed's Spice Indian was shortlisted in the East Anglian Takeaway of the Year category. The winners will be revealed in a ceremony at London's Royal Lancaster Hotel in October. Mohammed Munim, founder member and CEO of ARTA, said, "Asian restaurants and takeaways have made a significant contribution to the UK economy, both historically and in recent times. They deserve recognition and rewards for their efforts. These restaurants and takeaways have not only created thousands of jobs, but have also boosted local economies through their presence, especially post-Brexit. To provide staunch support to the thriving Asian restaurants in Britain, ARTA acknowledges and highlights their importance in the culinary landscape. Each nominee is a worthy winner, and we look forward to celebrating with them all at the awards ceremony on October the 6th.
And a final item on pubs. A family-run pub is making sure kids have just as much fun as the adults by giving its indoor play area a major overhaul. Borough Hall on Lord's Lane in Borough Castle is well known for its outdoor swimming pool, wedding chapel and Sunday carvery. And now the Southey family, who own and run the establishment, are planning to spend £70,000 on refurbishing its three-tier indoor playground. David Southey, who runs the venue near Galston with his partner Hayley and parents Paul and Pauline, said, "It's a big area that had been let go over the years, and we've just got round to it. It used to have a ball pit and a zip line, but that broke and was never replaced." Since taking over the pub in 2020, the family has revamped the plaza, the toilets and the function room. Plans for the new play area include a section for babies and toddlers, with the hope that this will improve weekday trade, and a sensory area. But the biggest addition will be an artificial football pitch, measuring some 10 metres by 4 metres, on the second tier. Underneath, on the ground level, there will be a small amusement arcade. The new play area will cost £5 per day, while the baby and toddler area will cost £3, and the pub will close for 2 weeks in November while the refit is completed. Mr. Southey said that the trade over the summer has been great, at least since the weather improved in July. "What makes us unique is that we're a bar and a restaurant with a play area, but we're always looking for the next thing to improve," he said. The Southey family, who ran the nearby Kingfisher for 14 years, took over Borough Hall in January 2020, only 3 months before the country went into lockdown. And in January 2022, they opened the venue's swimming pool for cold water dips in the winter months. Could use it in the summer months as well, I'm sure.
Yes, I think so. Plans to build a dog daycare facility in the town have been refused by the council after a series of objections from neighbours. The applicant, Carly Richards, hoped to move her business, Dog Days, from its existing premises at 157 Bells Road to new premises within part of the Herring Port Furniture Building on Riverside Road, Galston. This part of the premises is currently being used for storage and as a furniture showroom. The application has been submitted to change the use of site. Great Yarmouth Borough Council stated that the use change would have a detrimental impact on neighbouring businesses and residents. They said the new dog facility would generate a harmful level of noise and that the applicant had not included a noise impact assessment to justify the risks. The site is based on the narrow road that runs parallel to the River Yare, close to the lifeboat station. It was judged that the development would have an unacceptable impact on highway safety and would be a risk to pedestrians, cyclists, motorists and clients who would be attending Dog Days.
Now, this warm weather will have tempted many people down to the coast, but beachgoers have been warned to take care after an increased number of sightings of a venomous fish along the Norfolk coast. As the sea warms up during the summer, weaver fish, also known as stingfish, start to appear more frequently across the county's shorelines. So far, there have been reported sightings in Cromer, West Brunton and Sheringham. Classified as an ambush predator, the fish is found in shallow waters, spending most of the day buried in soft sand, displaying only its eyes and dorsal spikes. And if stood on by an unsuspecting bather, the weaver's dark-tipped spines can inject a painful venom. But while their sting can be very painful, they're not otherwise dangerous. And Galston Coast Watch has advised people to wear beach shoes when paddling in sandy waters. They added, if you do risk barefoot and happen to stand on a weaver fish, unfortunately, there is no quick treatment, but there's a very simple way to ease the pain. Hot water, as hot as you can take it, obviously plenty of that available on a beach, and if they leave any spines, remove them with tweezers, as they keep pumping toxins in if you leave them. However, they added, please wear beach shoes as the pain is very intense. Another one of my On This Day in History features, and in this week in August, there was a few things going on. There was the execution of Braveheart, William Wallace. There was the publication of Darwin's Theory of Evolution. Even some news of a German chemist synthesising aspirin as well as heroin. But this is the little one that caught my eye. 22nd of August. And it goes like this. The old Etonian was perhaps a little overconfident at the wheel of his brand new red Fiat. John Scott Ellis cruised through the streets of Munich today in 1931 without incident until he turned right and hit a pedestrian with a memorable crunch. The man brushed himself off, accepted Scott Ellis's profuse apologies and walked off unhurt. Only later did the Englishman learn that the man he had hit was none other than Adolf Hitler. It's a little known event, and by bizarre coincidence, in December of the same year, another forgotten collision took place, this time in New York. The victim, one Winston Churchill. Now, bearing in mind the preeminent roles both men played in subsequent events, it's easy to imagine how different history might have been. Although Hitler had not yet come to power, by this time the advance of the National Socialists, or Nazi Party, was well underway, and he was a famous figure. It is said that his German companion asked Scott Ellis whether he knew who that man with the small square moustache that he had just knocked down was. He had not the least idea. Naturally enough, the driver later thought about the incident and said, for a few seconds, perhaps, I held the history of Europe in my rather clumsy hands. He was only shaken up, but had I killed him, it would have changed the history of the world. After Churchill was hit by a car, he asked a friend, who was a physics professor, to calculate the impact and was informed that it was probably equivalent to a shotgun fired twice at close range. A good thing, he was teasingly told, that his weight had cushioned the blow.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run? We are are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done? Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So watch out, Mr. Hitler, you have met your match in us. If you think you can crush us, we're afraid you've missed the bus. Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
Easy Music picks this week. Bud Flanagan with the theme From Dad's Army. Right, it's time to get completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A stretch of path less than 100 metres long is set to be the focus of a showdown between villagers, holiday park owners and government officials to resolve a 10-year dispute. The lengthy saga centres on a tiny section of a blocked-off footpath that runs along the dunes between Winterton and Hemsby. It has been cut off by a property owner living next to the Winterton Valley Holiday Park since 2015. But now a public inquiry will be held to determine whether or not it should reopen. In 2021, walkers in the two villages fought a successful appeal to get it reopened. However, a fresh appeal against that decision was lodged, and now the warring parties will face officials from the Planning Inspectorate, the government department that presides over footpath disputes, who will hear from both sides before making a legal judgment. The narrow path at the end of Bush Road in Winston, known locally as the Long Beach Footpath, has been used by residents and holidaymakers as a shortcut between Winston Valley Estate and the Long Beach Estate for decades. It's about a 2 kilometre walk between the two coastal destinations, with both drawing thousands of visitors each year to their sandy beaches. But it has never been declared a public right-of-way by Norfolk County Council. In 2015, it was cut off after Joanna MacArthur and her husband, who used to own the plot it passes through, realised they were liable for the safety of those using it and that they could be sued if anyone was harmed there. Speaking to the Eastern Daily Press at the time, Mrs. MacArthur said, "It turns out we are legally responsible for people who use the path. There's no backup from the local authority, and we can't afford that level of public liability insurance." The couple have since sold the property, but the legal dispute continues. Villagers will present their evidence to the officials next month, which they say shows its use since the 1930s. Richard Vershoyle, who is in his 80s and lives in Winterton, is one of the locals involved. He said, "Currently the path is blocked by two fences. When we won the appeal, we thought things may change, but this was counter-appealed. It has not been used for 10 years now, but I have spoken to people who walked the route since the 1930s. It is the only safe route between Winston and Hemsby that you can walk along to avoid the traffic." James Cole, whose family have been landowners in Winston since the 1930s and runs the Winston Valley Holiday Park, hopes it will remain closed. He said, "It is our understanding that there is no public right of way, and Norfolk County Council also confirmed this after investigating in 2015. After it was closed off in 2015, we noticed a big reduction in the amount of antisocial behaviour we faced. Before that, we experienced lots of problems, but it was like a tap turning off. Ultimately, however, the decision will come down to points of law and it will be decided once and for all. Whatever the outcome, all involved will be relieved when the dispute is resolved after such a lengthy process that has lasted a decade. And the public inquiry will be held at Hemsby Village Hall in Winters Lane at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, September the 17th. And from the path to the road now, and part of the A47 was left gridlocked after an incident had blocked one of the road's busiest roundabouts in Yarmouth on Wednesday. Traffic was at a standstill in both directions leading to the Runham roundabout after a car had broken down. Police were called out to the scene on Wednesday afternoon, where they remained on scene as the vehicle awaited recovery. Drivers travelling eastbound on the Acle Strait met traffic as far back as the Halvergate turnoff. Congestion also built up in the town, with motorists facing delays as far back as the Gapton roundabout. Children and families have enjoyed the official reopening of a park in the town after its extensive revamp. People at the Blackfriars Play Area in South Yarmouth also relished in activities held by the Time and Tide Museum during the opening event. The transformation of the play area was funded by contributions from developers and the Borough Council capital funds. The Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Paula Waters Bunn, opened the new look area and said, "It brings me great joy to see the work completed and all ready to welcome a new generation of playful adventurers." One of the standout features of this refurbishment is the introduction of new inclusive play equipment, which means children of all abilities can enjoy the playground, making it a welcome and accessible space for everyone. In addition, we are proud to introduce sustainable, environmentally friendly ground surfacing. This not only provides a safe and durable surface, but also aligns with our commitment to sustainability and environmental stewardship. The refurbishment is based on a maritime theme and has a colourful scheme for adventurers to explore. The new inclusive play equipment includes a wheelchair accessible roundabout. Sutcliffe Play Limited, equipment providers, say their equipment is all sustainably manufactured in Britain from UK sourced materials. A Borough Council statement said, "Children, families and guests today enjoyed the official opening of the Blackfriars Play Area in Great Yarmouth following its extensive revamp." Police are still investigating a burglary in Great Yarmouth, which saw officers find a man with serious injuries. Norfolk police were called to reports of a theft at DIY Tool Hire at Enterprise Court on the Gapton Estate at 5:44 a.m. on July the 26th. Officers found a man inside the building with serious injuries consistent with a fall from height. The man in his 40s was taken to Addenbrookes Hospital. The circumstances of his injuries are not being treated as suspicious, and a spokesperson for Norfolk Police said inquiries are ongoing. Three men have been jailed over a planned cannabis farm in an abandoned warehouse, with the resulting crop possibly worth at least £400,000. Rasul Rahova, aged 30, Martin Bieber, 61, and Jergi Bieber, aged 28, were arrested after getting caught transporting hundreds of plants and pieces of equipment intended for a major illegal growing operation. Norwich Crown Court was told they had been stopped by police in Great Yarmouth on April the 4th, when officers became suspicious after the rented Ford Transit van the three Albanian nationals were in appeared to be dangerously overloaded. John Morgans, prosecuting, said officers discovered 599 young cannabis plants, foil air ducting and a large amount of growing compost. He said they were en route to a large empty warehouse that would have been converted into a growing operation capable of producing a significant quantity of cannabis. The court was told the estimated yield from an operation of that size would have been up to 38 kilograms, and the approximate street value of such a cannabis haul could have been as much as £400,000. All three had initially denied charges of being concerned in the production of cannabis, but later changed their pleas to guilty. Sentencing Rahova to 14 months and his co-defendants to 10 months each, Judge David Pugh said, "You were involved in an operation capable of producing significant quantities of cannabis." Rahova, from Essex, who hired the van and was driving, was previously jailed for 5 years in 2016 for his part in a conspiracy to supply cocaine. Martin and Jergi Bieber both entered the UK illegally and had been motivated to pay off debts to people smugglers, the court was told. Both now face deportation on their release from prison. Oliver Haswell, mitigating for Martin Bieber, said, "He was one of these three tasked with moving the plants and ducting to the location. He had no insight into the wider operation. These were in fact plant saplings, and we don't know how many, if any, would have ever reached maturity." The family of a man who died after falling from his boat while holidaying on the Broads have described how he was swept away by strong currents. Callum Bell, who was in his 50s, was on the stern of the vessel, which had moored up at Great Yarmouth, when he accidentally slipped into the water. Other family members were on board the 44-foot Brink's Lullaby vessel and heard the sound of the fall. They went to investigate, but by the time they reached the stern, Mr. Bell had been swept far from the boat and out of reach. "We were all sitting inside the boat when it happened," one of his relatives, who asked not to be named, said. "He must have fallen somehow. There aren't any barriers on the back of the boat to prevent someone from falling. Before we knew it, the current had pulled him so far away, just as it was getting darker too." The family called the emergency services, who were able to retrieve Mr. Bell from the water. However, he was pronounced dead at the scene a short time later, and the family said they had been left heartbroken. Mr. Bell from Nottinghamshire is the fourth person to die in Norfolk waters in the space of just 4 days. On Friday night, a man in his 20s died on Wroxham Broad, while the body of a man in his 30s were found in the River Wensum near Norwich on Tuesday morning. Both men had been swimming. And a fourth tragedy saw a man in his 70s die while swimming off Brancaster Beach on Saturday afternoon. The deaths have prompted water safety groups to urge people to take extra care. The Yarmouth incident happened about 9 p.m. on Tuesday night on a stretch of river close to the mouth of Bure, which is notorious amongst boaters. It is known for its extremely strong currents, which makes it difficult to navigate vessels and extremely dangerous for anyone who falls in. The scene near North River Road is close to where another tragedy occurred in 2020, when mother of three, Laura Perry, a holidaymaker from London, died after falling from the back of her hire boat as it was being moored up. One resident who lives opposite North River Road, Diana Watson, described the activity on Tuesday evening as the emergency services descended on the area. "It was like a scene from Casualty down here. It was awful," she said. "We saw so many blue lights flashing, it was crazy. I've never seen anything like it. It is such an awful situation. It is just so sad that all these people have been dying in the river recently, and something should be done to prevent more deaths," she said. Mr. Bell's family said there should be more safety precautions in place at moorings to prevent future tragedies. They had hired a boat from Brands Brinkcraft, which is based in Hoverton. And a hire boat sank on the Norfolk Broads after hitting the riverbank. The 45-foot Sapphire Light 2 was trying to turn when it struck the metal quay heading which lines the edge of the river. The vessel began to take on water and eventually sunk until it was almost completely submerged. Herbert Woods, the hire company that owns the boat, confirmed that all those on board were able to get off safely and were unharmed. The company alerted the Broads Authority about the incident, which happened earlier this month on the River Yare near Langley Dyke. The site of the sunken vessel was highlighted with yellow beacons until it was raised from the riverbed on August the 14th. A spokesman for the Broads Authority said, "The sunken vessel has been removed and recovered. The quay heading involved in this incident, which is not managed or owned by the Broads Authority, is part of the riverbank and does not move. Following the incident, our rangers have been down to the site to undertake a thorough check for any unmarked hazards and have not been able to locate anything of concern." A woman has died after suffering a medical emergency in the early hours of the morning. Fire and ambulance crews were called to Farm Lane in Ranworth, between Wroxham and Acle, at around 4:10 a.m. on Wednesday. Two ambulances, two rapid response vehicles, ambulance officer vehicle and fire appliances from Acle and Carrow were sent to the scene. A spokesman for the East of England Ambulance Service said, "Sadly, despite the best efforts of all involved, the woman died at the scene." The crews received a stop message at 5:22 a.m. Now, from 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, August the 25th, the East Coast Truckers Children's Charity will be setting off on its annual convoy. Some 90 trucks will travel from Postwick Park and Ride in Norwich, along Thorpe Road and the A47 to Great Yarmouth, then Galston, before stopping at Pleasurewood Hills in Lowestoft at approximately 12 noon. After spending the afternoon at the theme park, the truckers will head back to Norwich via Great Yarmouth Seafront each chauffeuring a disabled or disadvantaged child to sit up high in the cab. They will be travelling along Marine Parade at approximately 6 p.m. The police will escort the convoy along the road, allowing them to travel through red lights, roundabouts and junctions. And teams from the emergency services will all be part of the convoy on board two coaches. Supporters are expected to be out in droves along the route, clearing, clapping and waving to the children and the truckers. And it's 35, 36 years, I think, that they've been going. That's it's a wonderful event. And the 77th Annual Festival of Bowls is set to start this weekend on Great Yarmouth's Golden Mile as well. The event, hosted by Visit Great Yarmouth, will begin on Sunday, August the 25th, attracting bowlers from around the UK to the greens by Britannia Pier. This year's festival expects to be the largest and most exhilarating, with competitors of all abilities, from novices to experienced professionals. Players are ready to demonstrate their skills and play against the best in the sport, all while enjoying the companionship and communal spirit the festival is famous for. Various tournaments, including men's, ladies and mixed teams, will compete for singles, pairs, triples and fours. And the winners of each competition will receive a trophy, as will some runners-up, along with prize money. Paul Nicholls will be live streaming some of the highly anticipated matches on his YouTube channel, and details of which matches will be streamed will be available on the festival's Facebook page. The competition, which is set to run until Saturday, September the 21st, has been made possible due to generous funding from Visit Great Yarmouth and other sponsors ranging from Wentworth Holidays, Mal Dixon, right through to Thompson's Food Services Limited. Ruth Cockerell, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Marketing and Events Officer, said, "We are looking forward to another excellent Visit Great Yarmouth Festival of Bowls. It's a key fixture in the sports annual calendar, and we look forward to seeing all the competitors this year for what we know will be an entertaining and keenly contested programme. I'd like to thank all our sponsors and supporters, as well as the competitors, for helping to make sure this fantastic event can take place." Among the competitions, the ladies' singles, the men's fours, men's pairs and men's singles are some of the anticipated events, and the over 60s open singles and pairs will also grab attention. Well, let's hope that this sunshine and good weather continues for them too. Great Yarmouth's new MP has hit back at critics after being branded a landed Cotswold toff rather than a man of the people. Rupert Lowe, the Reform MP for Great Yarmouth, says he couldn't care less about the comments made in a scathing article by Private Eye, the satirical political magazine run by Ian Hislop. The profile, published in this month's issue, titled UK Riots, Ringleaders Identified, explores his education and business background and takes a swipe at comments he has made on social media since being elected. Mr. Lowe was unfazed by the attack, saying, "It is the opinion of my constituents I care about, quite frankly." The article describes the MP's education at private schools in Oxford, Dragon Preparatory School and Radley College, which charges between £40,000 and £50,000 per year, before saying, "This is the ideal background for a non-elitist man of the people." It goes on to describe his career in finance at firms including Morgan Grenfell, Deutsche Bank and Barings Bank, and later his stint as chairman of Southampton Football Club. His connections with a failed gym company that went bust in 2022 also come under the spotlight. It follows Mr. Lowe recording his financial interests with the House of Commons, detailing the 13 organisations he currently serves as a director or chairman for. He was co-director, together with the former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's wife Akshata Murty, of Digme Fitness. It collapsed after taking £630,000 in furlough cash and owing creditors, including taxpayers, £6.1 million. Mr. Lowe said the fitness firm was sadly a casualty of the pandemic and lockdowns, and said he was not liable for any debts. Clearly, when the law prevented people from attending gyms, a network of gyms suffered immensely. In fact, I lost an awful lot of money, he added. Westminster needs more risk takers in its ranks, with men and women who understand how the business world works. Risk in itself is risky. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I won't apologise for having a wide range of business experience. If people want more career politicians who have only ever worked in politics, there is plenty of that on offer at the elections. The MP, who lives at Ravenswell Farm, a 550-acre farm and equestrian centre in the Cotswolds village of Withington, is also criticised for his social media posts. It describes Mr Lowe's letter to Norfolk's Police and Crime Commissioner as claiming Great Yarmouth is a crime dystopia, after he suggested women have been harassed and attacked by gangs of men, and that shoplifting almost seems to be tolerated. He was also lambasted for his comments on the recent riots, which Private Eye said he blamed on mass migration. In addition, it is claimed that Mr Lowe posted an offensive comment related to a court artist's sketch of the 17-year-old charged over the Southport stabbings, a post he later removed after commenters described it as an egregious contempt of court. Responding to the article, the 66-year-old said, "We live in a free country, for now, and Private Eye is entitled to its opinion of me. Some will agree, others will disagree. I couldn't care less if they don't believe that I am a man of the people. I was honoured to have the faith of thousands and thousands of voters in Great Yarmouth. It's the opinion of my constituents I care about, quite frankly." Private Eye was founded in 1961 and has been edited by Ian Hislop, best known for his role on BBC's Have I Got News For You, since 1986. National Highways has warned of significant closures on the A47 next month. The closures are part of the £100 million project to dual the Blowfield and North Burlingham stretch of the road. Work began on August the 19th and is expected to continue in different phases until 2025 or 26. So from September the 2nd to September 20th, the road will be blocked overnight from Cucumber Lane at Brundle to the Acle roundabout. Between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m, eastbound traffic will be diverted along the A47 westbound, the A146 southbound, the A143 northbound, the A47 westbound, and back to the Acle roundabout. Westbound traffic naturally will follow the reverse route. Just days later, at midnight on September the 4th, the B1140 South Walsham Road will be blocked at its junction with the A47 Yarmouth Road, and this closure will remain in place until 6 a.m. on September the 21st. During this time, there will be no access to or from South Walsham Lane at its junction with the A47 from the north or southbound directions. Northbound traffic will be sent along the B1140 Newport Road until it becomes Shamry Hall Lane. It will continue on to Panksworth Road until it becomes the street in South Walsham, before joining Acle Road and turning right at the Windle Junction. The route follows this road until its junction with the A47, and southbound traffic again will follow the reverse route. Great Yarmouth High School has celebrated its best GCSE results for many years. There were tears of joy at Great Yarmouth Charter Academy, which is based on Salisbury Road at the former Great Yarmouth Grammar School premises, as teenagers collected their grades. And head teacher Dean Rosenbert was thrilled to see so many smiling faces. "We're absolutely thrilled with the pupils for achieving our best results that the school has had for many years," he said. "It's a testament to their hard work, but also, crucially, to the amazing commitment and dedication of our staff here. We've recently had a really positive Ofsted rating that recognised the hard work and improvements at the school, and that achievement has shown and paid dividends in our results. 60% of the pupils at the school in the last academic year were receiving free school meals. And Mr Rosenberg said, "We're delighted that we can be making a difference for children in what is undeniably a challenging area. We want to continue to be here for our pupils on their journey through education and ultimately continue to be a pillar of the community." Head boy George Smith from Great Yarmouth achieved grade 9s in biology, chemistry, maths and physics and he's off to East Norfolk Sixth Form College to study maths, chemistry and biology. I'm super happy, I worked really hard and it's paid off, George said. Being head boy really motivated me to succeed. It gave an added pressure, but certainly did help me to do as well as I could. Lucas Stankovicius from Great Yarmouth achieved 4 grade 9s in statistics, religious studies, history and English language. And he is now off to East Norfolk to study English literature, religious studies, history and law. He said, I'm just really happy. I set the bar really high and I just went over it anyway, which is so pleasing. Plus, my dad agreed he would pay me a tenner per grade 9. So I'm waiting for him to pay me my 40 quid later. Good boy. Gabrielle Rosca achieved grade 9s in maths and statistics and also got grade 8s in geography, French and English literature. She said, I'm just speechless and so pleased. She is off to Sir Isaac Newton College in Norwich to study biology, chemistry and maths for her A-levels. Well done to all of you.
That's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Desney, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.